That's Lou Donaldson on alto sax with Gravy Train, the title track of his 1961 album. That year, he also released another album, Here Tis. Lou Donaldson, of course, is accompanied by Herman Foster on piano, Ben Tucker on bass, Dave Bailey on drums, and Alec Dorsey on congas. And by the way, just to reinforce a point made last week when I talked about North Carolina A&T, he is a graduate of North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University, and he's still with us at age 89. This is Lead Stories. I'm Mutrice Lead, and Gravy Train is a clue to where we're going today, talking about the Clinton Foundation and more information released confirming the apparent atrocities committed by this foundation and by its principals, Hillary and Bill Clinton. Charles Ortel, former Wall Street financial analyst and leading expert on the Clinton Foundation, which he calls the largest unprosecuted charity fraud in U.S. history, has been reporting on the Clinton Foundation's epic law-breaking as it amassed billions of dollars from high-powered donors all over the world, looking for favors from the Clintons. He's here with us again today to add another chapter to the series on the Clinton Foundation, dealing specifically with the information contained in the trove of WikiLeaks documents released over the past several days, which seem to confirm and seem to reveal the inner workings, the illegal inner workings of the Clinton Foundation. Just so you know, WikiLeaks today saw its internet service cut mysteriously by a country that has not been named but was described as a, quote, state party, unquote. But WikiLeaks promises it will continue publishing its material using appropriate contingency plans. But it seems that there's a lot of activity now on the flip side of the Clinton coin, where the Clintons, of course, enjoyed a sense of confidence in the way things were going, that the explanations that they've been giving for all of these irregularities seem to be sticking. Not much the case anymore. A lot of activity, a lot of journalism, certainly not by the mainstream press, but a lot of it is being generated now that is pointing up some very serious things. In fact, just around noon today, Project Veritas, a conservative outfit, but I've remarked about it before, it's the conservative, right-of-center organizations that seem to be doing journalistic work. They have released the first of several videotapes, that undercover tapes that they made going inside the Clinton machine for the election and presenting some very disturbing things. And it's only the first installment of the series. So if you wish, you should check it out on YouTube. It just dropped about noon today, and it's already beginning to cause great concern and beginning to support Donald Trump's assertion that the election is rigged. But let's return to our guest, Charles Ortel. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Eutrice, for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Now, let's start with what you have learned. You've gleaned through the WikiLeaks information disseminated thus far, and I'm sure some things just flashed in your brain about what you've been dealing with, and there was the there was the alleged proof. We have to say alleged because we don't know for certain that it was the authentic thing. All we can say is that this was material that WikiLeaks claimed is authentic. And it does have a history of, a 10-year history of disseminating accurate information. What happened, as you glanced through the documents?
Well, first of all, I have to actually congratulate this organization.
Okay, we seem to have lost Charles. Maybe maybe there is also some effort to estate apparatus is apparently doing some a bit of work behind the scenes, interrupting Charles Ortel. So we're going to try and get him back and find out what happened there, but we lost him there for a minute. It was interesting. I looked at the documents myself and saw a very disturbing trend. And when you see on the inside how people are thinking, and they all are of the same mind, there's no differentiation, really. They are on board, they're thinking the same things, they are talking the same way, they are focusing on the same thing. And anything, it seemed, coming from the documents, everything and anything seemed permissible if it delivers the main objective and result, which is to have Hillary Clinton win this election by any and every means necessary. Very disturbing. But not surprising. People have been talking about this for years, that the Clintons and the way they have operated and continue to operate should cause grave concern for the entire country. Because in the end, this is about what is going on at ground level in this so-called democratic society, where we see such a total disregard for the democratic process. Nothing. No such thing happening. They have decided how they're going to run things, what they want done, and they designate the dirty jobs to other people who gladly take up, and they continue on their trek toward the White House and their plans. All right, we having some difficulty locating. Okay, Charles, you're back.
I'm back. That was rather dramatic.
Yeah, I thought, well, maybe you got the WikiLeaks treatment there for a minute.
No. So I was starting to say that with regards to WikiLeaks and the documents that I've looked through, I mean, as of this morning, I believe there are 12,000 emails, and obviously I cannot read 12,000 emails. So what I focused upon were the areas that I felt would be most productive, and that in particular is the early period when Hillary became Secretary of State, and then the period when a law firm was brought in, Simpson Thacher, to take a look at the Clinton Foundation. And my goodness, the things that you see in these emails are incredible. They confirm my worst fears. To begin with, I think it's important for the listenership to understand that this is not like the Gates Foundation or the Bloomberg Foundation or another entity where one family has basically decided to give a substantial economic interest to form a charity. This is a public charity. This is an entity that is constantly, while we're on this broadcast, raising money from the public. So the rules that apply to a public charity are very, very different than for a private foundation. For a public charity to be engaged in global solicitation efforts for contributions at all times and before it embarks upon solicitations in key jurisdictions, it must make truthful declarations concerning the merits and demerits of the people associated with the charity, concerning the track record of the charity, concerning the purposes of the charity. And this is a textbook case in global charity fraud. It is precisely the opposite. They have been using, it seems, a private server One major league revelation that comes out of all this is that they have been operating the Clinton Foundation from multiple secret offices that are not declared in the various foundation documents and reports to the states and to the IRS. The foundation must declare its home office, which is Little Rock, Arkansas. Even there, they have multiple addresses on the camp, on the complex, multiple different initiatives. But places like New York, where I am right now, are smarter than that. They don't let a charity do that type of black box fundraising where you have, you know, one charity, blanket name, and multiple offices around the world where, if it's not controlled properly with an audit and with independent trustees, what you can do is you can say, well, we've got the Charles Hertel charity, and I have multiple offices around the world, and people could send money in. I could open a bank account at, you know, let's say New Jersey, cash that check, but I don't bring it into base. I don't bring it into the home office. And that's why New York requires you to list out every single one of your offices and then explain who's in charge of the bank accounts, what bank accounts do you have, so they can attempt to try to police it. And that's why New York also has rules that are super, super strict. So in this, what you learn is that the Clinton Foundation had a sort of an office for theater up in Harlem where Bill made a pretense of showing. Then they had several offices on Sixth Avenue in Midtown. And then they took an office down on Water Street. Guess who was the prime lessor of that space? None other than Goldman Sachs. So in by 2011, they moved a large swath of people down to an office in Water Street. Don't declare that on the New York filing or any of these filings. And then proceed, it seems, to use the existence of the charity as a front for business development involving Bill Clinton and his team, involving members of the foundation, and involving a mysterious company called Clinton Executive Services Corporation. Now, another revelation that comes out of all this is that in violation of public disclosure laws, employees of the foundation are also employees of this mysterious Clinton Executive Services Corporation. And auditors and others have grave concerns about how much of this activity is intermingled. You're not supposed to have somebody simultaneously coordinating charity work with political work and with for-profit work in the same office space. You're just not supposed to do that. Yet that is precisely what these emails reveal as having happened. So we only have, as I said, 12,000 out of the rumored 50,000 that are going to come from WikiLeaks if they continue with this. So who knows what else we're going to see. But in terms of drama, there's all sorts of emails suggesting intense bickering and more than that between Doug Band, who was an outsider very close in the beginning to Bill Clinton, and Chelsea Clinton, who obviously is an insider in the Clinton family, each accusing the other of rather rough things. You see that in the email. And it seems, you know, we're just guessing at this point, it had reached a level where by October 27th, 2011, mind you, Hillary is still Secretary of State at this point, and Cheryl Mills is our top deputy at state. But Mills and Chelsea, even though they are not, and Bill, even though they're not listed as directors of the Clinton Foundation, are seen through these WikiLeaks dumps as controlling the foundation. Aggressively controlling the foundation. So they bring in a law firm, Simpson Thatcher and Bartlett. It's a great law firm. It's a firm, actually, when I was a young man, I was an 18-year-old boy, I was a proofreader for the summer at Simpson Thatcher, and I know the firm well. There's very smart people at that firm, highly experienced people, and they bring in two people, Victoria Bjorklund and Virginia Reynoso, who are well known, if you look them up, as experts on how charities are supposed to be run. And they make a very detailed request list, which you can see in these emails, for this, the kind of stuff that you or I or anybody who knows something about charity would want. Specifically, you know, please give us proof that you are validly organized and registered everywhere you are operating around the world. Please give us the account letters that would explain what accountants were concerned about for the most recent 3 years, and that would have been 2007, 2008, 2009. And then they have a telephonic meeting on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, which was, I think, the 23rd of November, 2011. And then they followed up with this report, December 3rd, 2011, 22-page report that's stating, among other things, that the foundation appears to have no financial controls. And it appears to be, they don't use the word illegal, but I will say it's illegal, illegally claiming to the IRS, claiming to all their donors that they're using tough accrual-based accounting, when in fact they're using cash basis accounting. And that's just not allowed. That's bright line charity fraud. And you see that. And then in some of these emails, I remember someone once told me it's important to remember that the E in email stands for evidence. And these emails are, you know, just exactly the kind of emails you don't want to see. Doug Band saying with regard to, I think, Teneo, if we get, if the public gets wind of this, we're screwed, is one email. There's multiple emails along those lines. Then going back to the earlier period, on November 24th, 2008, when the Clinton Foundation was derelict in filing its 2007 filings, they were due on the 17th, I think, of November 2008, but they did not file them by the final deadline. There's an internal memo that says, you know, we've been studying, it's actually from a top person, that might be Cheryl Mills or somebody like that, to an outside law firm, Wilmer Hale, saying, you know, we've been studying our list of donors and we divided them into two camps, persons of no concern and persons of possible concern. And this would be specifically, you know, foreign donors who should not have been giving money to the Clinton Foundation, maybe, or other types of suspect donors. And so it's very clear from that communication that they were aware of the issue, they were studying the issue, but the one thing they did do and have not done and have never done is to fill out the required forms explaining who the government donors were in aggregate from 1997 all the way to 2007, and for New York State filings explaining the identities, which they're required to do, to 2004, 5, 6, and 7. So, you know, you just start pulling on this and put yourself in the mind of Victoria Bjorklund and Virginia Reynoso, who are really super smart and experienced people. Victoria Bjorklund was a co-author of the book, the best book in the, on New York nonprofit corporation law. She surely would have seen these gross violations. And yet, they, you know, produced this memo December 3rd, 2008. Don't fix the problem. Allow the thing to continue fundraising. Allow it to file numerous false and materially misleading documents. And cooperate in a process that culminates by January 31st, 2012, in a watered-down version of a memo that, you know, makes it seem like, you know, nobody is really all that concerned and what we were doing is just getting together and plan for the future. It's a total whitewash. It's a cover-up.
Let me ask you this question about the method adopted so far, the way of operating. It suggests an effort to, and because they know what they're about, an effort to evade detection from the very beginning. All these several offices being erected and operated in different places that are not registered. We don't know how much money came into each of these offices, and we have no real listing. They're not officially listed, so therefore they don't exist. We have other corporations being formed and operated, like the one that you talked about, the Clinton Services Corporation. Essentially, they're running a business. This is a business model, strictly business capitalist model. And the fact that they remained this way in Manhattan, I suppose they may have used this model in other places, other cities as well, to, in my view, this seems to suggest an effort to diversify its own presence so that they're not easily detected.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Hillary was fond when they were under attack and she was first lady of talking about a vast right-wing conspiracy. I mean, this is a global criminal enterprise. You have to go back to the period January 21st, 2001 forward. By January 21st, 2001, Bill Clinton was not allowed to practice law. And he had a lot of debt. So what to do? And what they came up with was a scheme, it seems to me, where they're mixing in a gigantic mulligatawny stew private activities. They're harnessing the contacts that he derived through a life in, quote, service, really being paid by us, the taxpayer, harnessing all these valuable contacts with big, rich people and CEOs and government leaders to concoct a series of projects and introduce capital to projects and vice versa around the world, all in the guise of charity, burnishing. You know, one important section of this, I think, enterprise is to take the awful people in the world, the despots who need to have their, you know, halo placed over them, or at least some protection, you know, and giving the Clinton seal of approval to make, you know, Paul Kagame in Rwanda and, you know, these other people around the world who are so horrible, you know, have a veneer of respectability. And that seems to be an effort that he does in league, and they do in league with people who want to exploit the resources, primarily of countries that are poor, for their own personal benefit. I mean, it's really, this is so two-faced. I mean, they should call it the Janus Corporation, you know, the two-faced God. And I know where people's minds are going, and I didn't say the word.
Well, here's the thing. Those corporations, let's say like the corporation that gave space, in the world of charities and so forth, that would be considered a kind of in-kind service, right? An in-kind donation or something. Did these donations, including in-kind donations of donated space so that they can do, set up their businesses, were these things ever declared anywhere, not only by the foundation, but by those so-called donors?
Well, we have to, I mean, I think this is either going to get completely brushed under the rug, and I'll be reachable as inmate whatever in some prison somewhere if she wins. Or, you know, I think the public, between what you talk about with the O'Keefe video and now this ongoing story that we seem to see, I mean, I think across the political divide, we can agree that it's not acceptable to steal money from desperately poor people when the money has been raised for their benefit. It's just not okay. And, you know, in the hierarchy of crimes, a scheme of this magnitude run by people with this kind of background as a former president of the United States, an aspiring president of the United States, a PhD, and the daughter, and all the people, the Rhodes Scholars and others around, this vast collection of, I think, crooks. You know, we need to get to the bottom of what's really happening here. People across the country should be, and around the world should be, outraged by this behavior. But we should have an accounting of what's really going on. We need to put some pressure on Mr. Schneiderman. You know, the Haitian group that we talked about, who was so vocal, making that impromptu demonstration, were spot on. I mean, why is Attorney General Schneiderman allowing an epic fraud of this magnitude to operate right under his doorstep when he so aggressively goes after Trump? And I think we know the answer. This is a matter for all attorneys general. You can look at these emails. I noticed that, you know, save for a lame approach by Podesta to try to argue that, you know, we better be careful, some of these are invented, nobody is coming out authoritatively and saying, you know, none of this is true. Nobody has gone that far yet, and the WikiLeaks has until now been at this for several days. So there's a lot of material out there, and I go back to what I was starting to say, and that is that the Clinton Foundation is required as a matter of state, local, federal and foreign laws to make at all times truthful disclosures concerning the foundation, and they have never done that, yet they are now still fundraising. I mean, this is not like, you know, Gates also has to make truthful disclosures, but he's not raising money for his foundation. And the Clintons are.
This brings to mind another set of questions. This is while she was Secretary of State, and in a long view, you could see where the planning came in to run for U.S. Senate, which of course was an arrangement. She was pretty much guaranteed the slot as the U.S. Senator from New York State. This gives her a kind of protection in the seat of where this planning was going on and where these separate entities were set up. But it also brings to mind a question that it is impossible. I refuse to believe that no one at the federal level and in the White House knew that this was happening. I refuse to believe it. The Clintons had to have had political protection, and they had to have been given the signal that it's okay. You do what you need to do. Just don't frighten the horses. Keep it kind of tight and close to the vest. But go ahead and do whatever it is you wanted to do, because that's the arrangement. This, I've said before, President Barack Obama has some accounting to do here as well, some explaining to do. The federal government has a lot of explaining to do for a cabinet member, a secretary of state, to be involved, and a former president to be involved in all of these things, and nobody raised a hackle about it.
Well, you know, that's a very good point, Eutrice. And one thing that comes, one massive, I'd say it's a nuclear bombshell that comes out, is that when you go into the WikiLeaks and you put an MOU, what you come up with is proof, because they have the copies of it, or attachments, that there was a memorandum of understanding between the outgoing Bush administration and the outgoing Clinton administration and the incoming Bush administration, what to do and how to handle the government between Election Day and the swearing-in day. And that this a similar agreement was negotiated between the outgoing Bush administration and the incoming Obama administration. And a copy of that is, or a draft of it anyway, is there. Also, you know, we've heard a lot from various people when Hillary was frankly lying to her colleagues in the Senate to get elected, to get confirmed as Secretary of State, that there would be an agreement that would regulate the conflicts. Well, that was just Fingers drove a bulldozer through that concept, because what you see is the draft version of the agreement in a transmittal letter in the WikiLeaks that I was just looking at this morning. And whereas the final executed document says, you know, the memorandum of understanding that you see is the only agreement, the draft that you see says, well, actually, there's going to be an agreement between Bill Clinton and I don't know who, in addition to this agreement. And that's significant, because the way they do this, you know, they think they're being super clever because they don't want to understand New York law and federal law. Bill Clinton, on purpose, in my view, was never made a trustee of the Clinton Foundation until after Hillary Clinton, the main foundation, that is, until after Hillary Clinton left the White House, left her role as Secretary of State. Why they took the risk of making him a trustee now, 2013 forward, is a bit beyond me, because he hasn't properly disclosed the defects in his background, or many defects, legal defects in his background, and or the many relationships that are very complicated and dangerous in requisite New York filings and other state and foreign and federal filings. So what I think they thought they were doing when Obama came in is they'd have an agreement between the Clinton Foundation and the Presidential Transition Committee, or team, or whatever you call it. And that agreement, you know, it's a nice, shiny agreement. You read it carefully, and then if you don't know how these type of agreements work, you don't know that it's completely meaningless. Memorandum of understanding has no legal force in effect by design. So it was a sham. It was a ruse. Lawyers in the Senate should have known that. They shouldn't have fallen for it, and they should have understood that Bill wasn't an officer or a trustee of the Clinton Foundation. So in any event, this ruse of agreement didn't affect him. And if we believe the WikiLeaks cables, which could be wrong in this regard, things could have changed, but if we believe them, we have evidence that there's another agreement, multiple agreements involving Bill Clinton and letters that we haven't seen yet. Another curious thing is there's an email dated November 28, 2008, which suggested the draft of the agreement, of the Memorandum of Understanding, whereas Judicial Watch, when they were actively trying to get relevant materials, was provided a final version of this document, and the final version was said to be authentic, and I checked with the person who got it at Judicial Watch, I have an email confirming this, that it is authentic. Well, that document is signed the 16th, it's the final version, and it's signed by Valerie Jarrett on the 16th of November 2008. So please explain to me how you engage in time travel. Yeah. So, I mean, this is really, for people to defend this in the Clinton camp and amongst Democrats, it's defending the indefensible. You know, the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party, and I disagree with Bernie Sanders on many of his economic premises. On some of what he stood for, I'm right with him, even though I'm, you know, conservative economically. You know, this distrust of foreign wars, distrust of the national security state, et cetera. But, you know, looking at this, what we see between the O'Keefe video and now these WikiLeaks cables should chill good people in America, good men and women and children, should chill us all to the bone. Because what we see here is gross incompetence, utter disregard for the letter and spirit of the law, and sort of an arrogant and snide approach that the people in the center of power in Washington, D.C., connected to the Clintons, no better than we all, should be free to feast off the economy, feast off the wealth of this nation and the world, and have one big nonstop party. And when it comes time to be contrite, you know, they could trot out Bill Clinton or somebody else to talk about all the, you know, the things that sound too good to be true, because frankly they are too good to be true, of his accomplishments. You know, this is not what we signed up for in this country. We are a nation of laws. And when you allow it to go to this level, when you concentrate power in the hands of people who are this dishonorable, disreputable, and this prone to illegality, you're asking for nothing but trouble.
But I want to tap into your expertise as a whistleblower. You targeted, and you were right, for fraud. You targeted AIG, General Electric, and many other companies in 2007, 2008, before the big crash. This suggests that the Clintons thought about this very deliberately for a very long time. They laid out their plan, meticulously laid out their plan, and they had a coterie of people who were to play their appropriate supporting roles. This involved collusion of the governmental system, no question about it. There is no way that this foundation could have achieved all these things, the immense amount of money. You estimated at least $100 billion flowing through the foundation and its so-called affiliates. There is no way that this could occur without some kind of consistent governmental support, looking the other way, in fact, even giving them permission to do so. Tomorrow I'm going to do a commentary about President Obama. Initially, when, you know, he surfaced, it was a very attractive candidate and so forth, but I soon saw signals that there ought to be questions about this man. And I think I was right. And I believe that President Obama, in some very significant way, is tied into this whole thing, not only by giving Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton the leeway to flout the law and to engage in illegal activities, which is organized crime. This is, I mean, if you were to apply federal statutes, it would come under the RICO Act, you know, Racketeering, Influence, and Corrupt Organizations Act. This would also involve even, I would even go so far as to say it would involve crimes against the country. When you are doing this thing at this level that this couple has been doing it. But more than that, I think there is reason to believe here that they actually, I mean, when you add it all up, they actually were running a parallel government because they seem to have all of the tools of government without all of the responsibilities and all of the accountabilities of a government. But they were running a government that was strictly related to capital gain, to money. Would that be a far-fetched definition of what this foundation was actually doing?
Not at all. I mean, I think, you know, in the first instance, you know, at this stage, we're just speculating what may be Barack Obama's motivations in all this. You know, part of it may be that, you know, if you can't beat him, join him. I mean, he's got his own foundation set to go. There's rumors, maybe I think it's already existing, and there's press speculation that he's going to raise, just for the building alone in Chicago, $500 million. You know, who knows what he'll do after that. So, you know, there is no check and balance here for these types of foundations. That's the first issue. And for the big companies that you're talking about, GEs, the AIGs, the big multinationals, the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Department of Justice in this country are not strong enough, staffed well enough, or inclined, frankly, to administer the type of justice that should be administered to these enormously complex organizations, be they companies, for-profit-seeking companies, or charities. There just isn't a credible power out there to do that. And across the spectrum, people understand that. Now, there are many good people in a lot of these charities who take this work seriously and abide by the rules and are a good example. And there are good companies as well, people who really believe that it makes sense to follow the law because, you know, that's just what it makes sense to do. But on the other hand, there are people like the Clintons and their colleagues in this mess who are inveterate, it seems, fraudsters. They realize that, you know, they've had a life in politics where the truth doesn't seem to matter and nobody actually holds you to account. And it's worked out just fine. I mean, they graduated from their law schools and, you know, somehow through a life of selfless service and, in quotes, charity, now they're worth hundreds of millions of dollars after taxes. I mean, you know, this is, and that's what we know about. Or, you know, from the disclosed amounts of money and links to various investment schemes. Who knows how much money may be hidden in bank accounts around the world, in securities accounts, and agreements. Nobody really knows. And that's been the whole purpose of this thing, to have no controls, no independent trustees. All the trustees are conflicted up until about 2013. We have an experienced law firm saying that, you know, the books are cooked. As of December 3rd, 2012, and I can tell you they've been cooked since day one. So there are never any good reasons for operating something like this, and what they've, I think, decided to do is just create a gigantic mess so big and so embarrassing that, you know, it can't be fixed. And we'll just say, well, you know, well, there's some technical violations here, our accountant screwed up, and, you know, we'll do our best to. They've tried that excuse many times. How many restatements have there been? How many new filings have there been? You can't fix this type of fraud. Now, as to puppet masters behind the strings here, you know, one name that does get a lot of, in some circles, awful press is George Soros, and he's all over this. You know, and Simpson Thacher, the law firm that did this review in 2011-12, points out in an email that George Soros is a very important client of Simpson Thacher's. Now, Thacher is a huge firm and has many big clients, but, you know, George Soros, for him,
for the people who live here, there might be a big problem. He gave around $1 million or so supposedly from the foundation in 2004, the HIV/AIDS entity that legally was never authorized, organized, or operated properly. He gave Zug, Switzerland-based Allied Foundation, I think it's Open Society, something institute, or something like that, gave another multi-million-dollar gift in 2005. Well, of course, you know, these highly problematic donations, which, you know, in a normal charity would result in an amazing fine, swift retribution and fine. These have to be covered up, I guess. You know, that was the attitude that perhaps Lois Lerner's department in the IRS took and what the Clintons were able to do. And so they've resisted the filing of this information, which dogged investigators around the world were able to find, and we have. So we know this happened, if these filings are accurate. And we know the Clintons have been trying to cover it up. And we know Simpson Thatcher should have been able to get this. But they didn't. So,
we'll take your questions in a minute after this break at 888-874-4888. Our guest is Charles Ortel, who has been coursing us through this labyrinth called the Clinton Foundation and highly questionable dealings of this foundation. But just before we get to the break, again, the number is 888-874-4888 to ask your question of Charles Ortel. What now? I mean, what else is needed for some kind of action that obviously will have to come, since the governmental organizations seem unwilling or unable to take it on? What could happen to force the issue?
Well, that's a great point. See, inside our country, politics are so divided that, you know, it may be that we can't really get any effective inquiry done until after the election, assuming she does not win. If she does win, there are a lot of foreign governments and foreign taxpayers that have been defrauded out of a lot of money. There are a lot of countries that have been harmed here. Haiti, we've talked about extensively. Colombia, there was a great story over the weekend, or last week, I think, by Ken Silverstein about the toxic mess left behind in Colombia. So one would hope that if we can't have a Spike Lee moment, as in doing the right thing here in this country, if we can't stand up to these people whose record, whose combined record is so atrocious, if we can't convince, you know, a single state attorney general to do the right thing anywhere in this country and open an investigation, look hard at these facts that are in the public domain for themselves, and move as aggressively as Schneiderman moved against Trump, or as that U.S. attorney has moved against an African-American congresswoman from Florida over $800,000 slush fund, faces 350-plus years in prison. If we can't do that for ourselves, then perhaps it's going to take external actors. But I've got to believe, you know, what is out there now in the public domain, is there must be one person, powerful person in the Democratic Party who says enough is enough. You know, the Bernie team has been hornswoggled by the Clintons. Now this, I mean, we can't put up with this. There has to be one decent, powerful person who can bring some, you know, sense to this. Then we need to understand the magnitude of what happened here. We need to really have a full exposition of everything, the entire record here, what was really going on. We have to learn the magnitude of the damage. Let the thing unfold, punish, you know, expose it, figure out the crimes that have been committed, punish, hold those to account who have committed crimes. Let those who need to suffer economic penalties suffer those penalties. And then we really need to think about how best to regulate charities, U.S. charities that just operate here, and especially those that operate internationally.
So the lesson here also has to do with these are governmental officials, high level, at the highest level, really, a former president behaving this way, a former senator and former secretary of state. And in a way, with Bill Clinton, you will have to say, the titular head of the Democratic Party. So he's got a lot of protection, a lot of buffer between him and his wife and possible prosecution. But I wonder why. I mean, of course, people have a sense of loyalty to the party and to the Clintons, and unexplained loyalty, and not to to the law or to the people. But it seems to me that within the realm of the law, there should be a vigorous discussion about the conduct of the Clinton Foundation, the conduct of the Clintons themselves, and the obvious dichotomy in the application of the law. This should interest people in the law. This should also interest people in the philanthropic world, because here is perhaps one of the worst examples of what a charitable organization should not do. And we don't see, I don't hear that in any of these circles as a professional interest that people are beginning to talk about this at all.
Well, I think, you know, part of the reason is that so many who might care about it in the Democratic Party fear Donald Trump even more. They say, well, you know, better the devil we know than the devil we don't want to know. But, you know, my concern, while I have, you know, I got into this fully appreciating that there are political ramifications to what this study has uncovered and will uncover, my interests are predominantly in making sure that this charity is brought to account, and that you know, the charitable sector in this country and around the world is strengthened through the exercise. I mean, there are a lot of very good charities, U.S. charities, that operate around the world, and all of them are tarnished and hurt by this type of activity, because this type of activity gives the Vladimir Putin, gives the leader of China, gives the leader of other countries a perfect excuse to say, listen, if you in America cannot discipline a former president who is operating a rogue fraud of this magnitude, why should we believe anything you have to say about any American enterprise? And it's a fair question. And that's why we have to expose it and punish those responsible, so that people around the world will say, you know, actually, you know, we will administer justice. Justice in this country is fair. It's not, you know, blind to political people who are powerful. And, you know, I think, Utrice, you've been raising some fantastic questions. I hope your audience will get engaged in this. I hope they'll talk to, if they have contacts with attorneys general around the country and other regulators, I hope they'll speak up. I hope they'll speak to, you know, the media and to communities. I mean, I remember as a child, you know, getting involved, as we all did, you know, giving money to UNICEF and here and there. And, you know, there's this great tradition. Little kids will, you know, save up their change and, you know, put it into a big pot and as a, you know, a learning experiment or whatever what was that? A teachable moment, Barack Obama called them. You know, at a young age, American children around the world are taught that, you know, give some of your spare money away and it'll go to a good use. We can't let people who are pillaging, literally pillaging around the world for profit, to get away with it. We just can't let this continue.
What do you expect will be coming down the pike in terms of further declarations and discoveries with regard to the Clinton Foundation? What are you looking for particularly?
Well, I would guess, Utrice, that there are going to be incriminating emails back and forth, people complaining about the state of the foundation in given countries, donors asking what's really going on, maybe even inquiries we don't know about that have been stilled by actions of the Clinton Foundation. I mean, there's a heck of a lot of emails. There are 40,000 or so still remaining, 38,000 still remaining. The process, I know from having served on one domestic-focused foundation and now on one that's internationally-focused, there's a lot of paperwork when you operate in a foreign country. And there are a lot of filings we haven't seen yet. I mean, the Simpson-Thatcher report we've seen so far is a preliminary information request that that doesn't seem to get very much into the international activities of the Clinton Foundation. So I would guess, knowing France the way I know France, and some of these other countries where there are very strict regulators, I would guess that that there's a lot of correspondence that we haven't seen yet of government donors saying, you know, we gave you some money over here. There's no record in the filing of it. What's really going on? And back and forth and back and forth. And maybe even, you know, more emails like the one I mentioned in the beginning of the broadcast of, you know, if the public finds out about XYZ, we're really screwed. I think we're going to see those type of email chains in abundance.
Ali from New York, you're on the air with Charles Ortel.
Mr. Ortel, I have two questions. One is, and you just mentioned about those foreign country that they have given donation to the foundation. But as you know, Mrs. Clinton will be the next president of the United States. And I guess I'm just wanting to know if you think any of those foreign country would be coming after her for the donation that they had given her. But remember, after she becomes a president of the United States, I think she will retaliate against any of those countries, even even blackmail them, how I believe the United States did to France. They use blackmail to this, you know, to those countries. Another, my second question to you is, I have been listening to you all this time about in different shows from you trees. And my question to you right now is, what is one thing that I could tell people about Hillary Clinton's, you know, the Clinton Foundation, that it convinced them about the evil mind of these people? Because I have used, one of the things that I have used is telling them how she used her office when she was Secretary of State to do favors for countries that have made donation. And it's still, when you tell people those things, they just go, huh? And they don't really, they don't want to get it. They don't want to really, really believe what you're telling them. So there is anything that you could tell really quick, that something that I could go back to tell these people?
Right.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Well, those are two great questions. I'll try to answer each of them completely. So in the case of, you know, whether foreign governments are going to do anything, I think you're absolutely correct that for the moment, foreign government donors are waiting to see which way the wind will blow. And that if Hillary loses, which could happen, then I think foreign governments and other regulators around the United States will be very interested in moving aggressively against the Clinton Foundation. If she wins, different story. Now, as to things that are should really jump out at people, you know, one thing that was in the emails that we didn't talk about is an admission from, I think, in Hillary's own words, that the United States helped create ISIS, and that ISIS was funded by Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Well, Saudi Arabia and Qatar are major league donors to the Clinton Foundation. You know, what kind of ghoul takes money from governments, in the case of Saudi Arabia, that are connected to numerous acts against the United States, which have resulted in, you know, harm. I'm thinking here in New York, for example, and elsewhere in Washington and in Jacksonville, Pennsylvania. What kind of ghoul takes that kind of blood money in a foundation? And then, you know, while Secretary of State doesn't ensure that we do the right thing in the Middle East, or how does that kind of behavior, which harms this aggressive radical assault, I'm thinking now of ISIS, you know, where people are, homosexuals are thrown off buildings and opponents of the regime are put in cages and either burned alive or cut in half or drowned in the ocean. I mean, what kind of ghoul goes to sleep at night, you know, without understanding that his or her behavior engendered the rise of this? I mean, what kind of ghoul, knowing that had happened under his or her watch, would then decide it was a smart thing to run for president of the United States and leave the free world? So in terms of trying to convince, you know, some people are not going to ever be convinced. They're just going to vote for Trump or for Hillary. It doesn't matter. There's no logic involved. But for the people who like to think Ask those people to look at a real charity, a charity they support. Most people on listening to this broadcast know of such a charity. Look at its books and records. Ask somebody who knows something about accounting to show you a legally compliant audit of the Clinton Foundation, because there isn't one. Ask somebody to go into the history of the Clinton Foundation and find a period where they actually had independent trustees. And then, if they're more technically oriented, go into the WikiLeaks thing and search for the governance review done by Simpson Thatcher, the 22-page document. It tells you everything you need to know.
Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. And I want to thank you, Charles, for being with us again to walk us through this maze, as you have been. And we will look forward to, once you've digested the next batch, if ever we get the next batch, we'll take a look at what that batch reveals. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Yatrice.
Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You want to stay tuned for that. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the program. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.